Taking a look at your physical health in some ways today with your aches and possible pains. Maybe you've had a strain or a sprain. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, back once again to visit with us. And certainly if you would like to join in, you're most welcome. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Lori is usually accompanied by Bill Boisnall. Bill's
indeed
teaching, I believe.
Indeed. Bill says that he has to lecture today, but I think it's a ruse. I think he's still weeping over the loss of by both the Badgers and the Packers this weekend.
It was tough.
He's an avid fan, and I have a feeling there may be some of that going on, although it has been said that he's required to actually lecture once in a while in his position here at UW. So.
And then your sister was going to fill in. She's filled in the past.
My sister was going to fill in, bless her heart. But sadly, this morning, she had to go have a baby. She's apparently in the hospital as we speak, delivering a baby. I said, oh, come on, you can be on the phone between contractions. Sometimes there's 3 or 4 minutes. We can get a couple calls in that amount of time. She was not humored by that.
She wasn't humored.
But we're thinking about her today, and who knows, we may get a call saying that there has been a new child delivered to our family.
So that would be great.
Great.
In the meantime, every line is filled. So let's go to the phones.
Carry on.
Sarah in Milwaukee, you are first. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, thank you for having me. I have a question. I'm a server. I do it because I'm a student and I've been doing it for about 5 years. And recently, my wrists have really been bothering me. And I didn't know if there was anything that I could do after I get done with work to help with that pain.
So you're carrying heavy plates or several plates at a time with food on them?
Yeah, and I'm kind of twisting my back at the same time, and I've been noticing it more and more as I've been getting older. And I need to be able to be a server for at least one more year until I graduate. So
okay. And carrying, are you carrying things in front of you with your palms up, or are you carrying big trays on your shoulder with your wrist cocked back?
My wrist is, cocked back, like almost to a flat position.
Okay.
And arching my back to the side.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you've clearly identified the problem, and that is the postures that you're in. I mean, your body wasn't designed to be in those kind of postures with that extra weight and then having to balance, a tray full of food at the same time. So if there's any way at all you are able to carry things in a different manner, that would be the first step.
Would a brace help at all?
Well, a brace would certainly help, except it's not going to allow your wrist to go back in that position.
Yep.
So that would be the kicker, because that was one of the first things I thought, is you could get some support to help support your wrists a little bit, but the support is not going to allow your wrist to flex that far because, as I said at the beginning, it's not supposed to be in that position for long periods of time. So, I mean, you can go and you can try some braces and see if there's anything that will allow you to get in that position. My concern is, you may be able to actually get in that position by compensating and flexing your fingers. Then what you're going to do is you're just going to shift the load from your wrist, which is actually stronger than your fingers. So my suggestion would be, if you can, to vary carrying the load so that you carry some in that position, but other loads that you carry in different positions in front of you, or using a card if it's all possible. And then when you get to the table, sometimes you have to get an awkward position, so that's just how it is. But as you lean, before you lean, tighten those lower abdominal muscles to create like a brace for your back so that your hips and your pelvis are stable and rock solid, and then move on top of that solid base of support.
Yeah.
After you finish working, putting some ice on your wrists would be helpful. And then being in a general strengthening program, an upper body strengthening program, doing biceps curls, triceps extensions, overhead presses, chest presses, things like that. But do those with your wrist in a neutral position and really focus on that neutral position.
Okay. Thank
All right.
You very much.
But you're very wise to do preventative work now.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you going to be when you graduate?
Well, I'm going into diplomatic studies, so hopefully I will be...
You won't be carrying a lot of trays around.
Yeah.
Right, right.
That's probably a good thing. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. And Kathy in Appleton, you're next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry.
What can we do for you?
Please ignore the beep that's coming in. I'll take that later. But I'm calling because earlier this summer, I sprained my ankle in early June. That seemed to have healed okay. I did see someone about it, and they gave me some exercises, and of course I used ice and so forth. But then in late August, early September, I took a fall off a bicycle, which wasn't used to riding because it had the toe, mm-hmm. it had toe pockets, mm-hmm. and I simply wasn't used to it. I threw my right leg over, and then when I was going to take my left foot off the pedal, you don't take it off, you pull it out of the
right.
pocket. And the bike came down on top of me, and I think my ring finger, my left hand, took the brunt of the weight with the hip and shoulder. And I immediately iced it. It hurt a great deal, but I could bend it. So, of course, I figured there was nothing broken. And it still is, the knuckle it still is so large that I can't get a ring out of it. Out of 10 fingers, it had to be that finger.
Of course. So that we're not dealing with your ankle sprain. We're talking about the finger.
Well, it's just coincidental. All these things happen. On that same day, my 24-year-old bird died on top of it.
Oh, no. Did you see anyone for the finger?
An MD who I went to for another reason.
Okay. All right. Did they take x-rays or anything like that?
No. They said, can you bend it and uh-huh. move it? Well,
yeah.
And I said, okay. yes, which
okay.
I can.
All right. And is it, in terms of it being functional, can you use it for everything you need to do and the problem is just that it's big and swollen, or is it limiting you in your activities in some way?
It really doesn't limit too much. If I press on it, it is a little bit sore. And do I notice it if I'm not doing anything? Just a very small amount.
Okay. Chances are you sprained that joint. And as long as it's not limiting you and you're not having pain, I doubt that there's anything seriously wrong with it. But anytime you sprain a joint, it really does take several months to recover from that, especially in a joint that's a high-use joint, like the joints of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
It may go down over time, but it may always be a little bit bigger. In the meantime, it would be useful to do some strengthening exercises for the muscles in there, doing squeezing a soft ball or putting a sponge in the water and squeezing that. And you want to squeeze it both with the pads of your fingers and with the tips of your fingers, and then doing strengthening the other direction. For example, putting a rubber band around the nail part of your finger and lifting the finger up and down. And bending and straightening from each of the joints to strengthen it the other direction.
Oh, okay. Well, that would sound like great suggestions. I was a little bit afraid that it might turn into an arthritic condition, and I didn't know if it was time to get my rings resized yet so that I can wear them again.
Yeah, I'd probably hold off a little while on that and see what happens over the next couple months.
Good luck, Kathy.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Jan in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was training for a marathon about 5 weeks ago, and, of course, 3 weeks right before it, went on my last long run, and I could feel a little bit in my right hamstring and glute. And then, of course, the next day I had to help somebody move. And I tried running Monday, and I mean, that was 5 weeks ago, and I couldn't even run. So, you know, I had 3 weeks before the marathon, so I thought, well, I'll just kind of rest it. So I jogged a little bit, and I walked a lot, and I rode a little bike and stuff, and never did quite come around. It got better, but never did quite come around. So I still did the marathon. I walked and jogged it, and,
okay.
you know, still finished it off and stuff like that. But I can still feel it. This is kind of an ongoing thing. I'm in my right side where my hamstring and my glute bother me and stuff like that. I've had it on and off before.
Mm-hmm.
I do stretches like every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I even have like one of those foam rollers for the pressure points
mm-hmm.
and stuff. I do that. And I can jog now, and the hamstring seems to have come around and stuff like that. But I started running again a little bit, and I can still, but the glute, you know, it's kind of an ongoing thing. It's on and off. I've had it before and stuff like that. And when I start running right now, it throws me way off that I can feel it kind of. It feels on, like on the inside of the knee, on the shin for the first little bit, and it tingles a little bit.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I start running, and once I get into the run, I'm okay, but it's still sore and stuff, and I'm just wondering what I can do to rehabilitate
that.
It.
Okay, all right. Okay, I was traveling down one or two paths here, and then when you started saying that you were having symptoms in your shin and a little bit of tingling, that clarified the path. My concern is that it was actually sciatica and not a hamstring or glute muscle problem per se, because your sciatic nerve passes through your glute muscles and it can pass through them in a number of different ways. There's all different variations of that. And for some people, that nerve passes right through the piriformis muscle, which is one of the deep muscles down in your butt, and some tightness in that muscle or abnormal mechanics can give you sciatic symptoms. So it seems to me that you need to go see somebody and have them look at your posture from stem to stern, you know, all the way down, looking at your hips, looking at your back, looking at your pelvis, looking at your feet, and figure out why you're getting the sciatic problem, and then give you some more specific stuff to treat that.
Mm. Okay, so it's more of a posture problem.
It may be posture. It may be – you just have to check the biomechanical abnormalities, because the question is, why are you having it on one side and not the other?
Yeah.
So there's some asymmetry from one side to the other, and a good PT should be able to sort out what it is. Sometimes it gets hard in people like you who are really active figuring out what's the chicken and the egg.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it takes a couple of visits and trial and error of a few different things to sort that out.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Would if you had a foot that was like an eighth of an inch shorter than the other, with a leg, I should say, would that make a difference?
Oh, God, Larry, what a great question. It always brings me back to one of my favorite stories, which is The Princess and the Pea. For some people, an eighth of an inch leg difference wouldn't make a difference. Some people can have a quarter inch leg length difference and not have any symptoms because they have all kinds of other genetic factors in their favor. Then there are other people who have, you know, connective tissue that isn't so great and joints that aren't aligned quite right, and that eighth of an inch is just enough to put them over the edge.
Yeah. Susan in Appleton, your turn now. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Two quick questions. One is, I'm among the millions of people who have chronic low back pain. And about 10 years ago, I joined a health club, and they had a piece of equipment where you would lean over it and then totally actively straighten up using your low back muscles. And we always hear about abdominals and strengthening abdominals for low back discomfort, but honestly, when I used this equipment, I had zero low back pain. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with it, and would you recommend it?
Oh, sure. I'm familiar with that. And in your case, I would certainly recommend it. But it's one of...
Does it have a name?
Does it... Well, they usually call it a back extension machine.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where I can't recommend any one exercise for everybody, especially in the case of chronic low back pain, because there are so many different underlying causes of low back pain.
Sure.
So in your case, it seemed to work great. So, you know, carry on. And people should keep in mind that what worked for you may or may not work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing really mechanical about it. I mean, the person on it
does
all the work.
Right, exactly. You just, you know, hang over that, you know, a pad at your waist, and you're basically hanging at a 90-degree angle, and you raise your trunk up to the level.
That sounds exactly it.
Uh-huh.
And it's called an extension?
A trunk extension. A back extension.
Thank you very much. That was really the thing that did it for me. The other question I had was, is there a point at which a person with a kyphotic neck or thoracic spine cannot correct that with physical therapy?
Wow, another good question. In terms of correcting it, for spinal posture, you have kyphosis, which is kind of that forward hump, the thoracic hump, or people used to call them dowager hump. Then you have scoliosis, which are lateral curvatures. There are two different kinds of curvatures. There are static and dynamic. So some people have a dynamic curvature. So, and that's usually related to posture. So you see some people who kind of lean forward and kind of have a hump back, but they can sit up straight and they can correct it. That's a dynamic curvature. Then you have static, which is more typical of scoliosis for people who have adolescent idiopathic scoliosis, where it's static and changing your posture or how you sit doesn't correct that curve. There's also dynamic scoliosis, usually in adults with low back pain, where they shift their spine away from, for example, a disc herniation, and then we try to correct the disc herniation, and then they can go back to their correct posture. So is there a point at which dynamic can become static? Absolutely. If you maintain that posture and you don't correct it and you stay in that poor posture, for years and years and years, then all the soft tissues will shorten and adapt to that, as well as the bony anatomy. And it gets much harder to correct.
With static kyphosis, would that be a condition that you would expect to exist early on, or
from later? Yeah.
No, it's something that would occur later. For example, in older adults, due to collapse of the disc, of the anterior portion of the disc, and then the curve accentuates forward, or arthritis, where you get some of the facet joints or the spine itself, where it starts to collapse or compress. You may have heard of compressive disc disease. Well, in the thoracic spine, it tends to compress anteriorly, and then that increases the curvature. Mm. So usually in older individuals.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you very much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're suffering a bit from an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain, we have the expert for you, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, our guest. And Jack in Eagle River, I believe, is next. So let's go to Jack. Hi, Jack. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I pulled a hamstring playing softball about 4 years ago.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And ever since, I get these real severe knotting up in the hamstring area, even just laying in bed. And, I can just feel the knot there, and then about 2-3 minutes, it'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 71 years old, so I don't know. What do you recommend?
How often does this happen?
Well, sometimes 2-3 times a week, sometimes, maybe 2-3 weeks later. I don't run anymore. I'm very cautious about running.
Okay. Did you ever rehabilitate that hamstring pull? You see anybody about it?
No.
Okay. And you don't have any numbness or tingling or anything down into your calf or foot on that side?
No.
Okay.
It's pretty localized, seems like.
Okay. Well, the possibility is that when you pulled it, you damaged the hamstring. It's replaced with scar tissue, which doesn't have the normal vascularity and so on that your normal hamstring does. Mm-hmm. And when you lay down at night and you have decreased circulation down into your extremities, that area isn't getting sufficient circulation, and so it cramps up.
Mm-hmm.
So ways to treat it, you can do a little bit of stretching before you go to bed and see if a little bit of stretching helps with the blood flow in the area or relaxes you a little bit. I'd make sure that you were in a position where you weren't occluding the blood supply to your leg at all, where you didn't have your, hips really flexed or extended in any position, or you didn't have any pillows or anything underneath there that might occlude the circulation.
Huh.
Other than that, you could think about going in and getting some exercises that you might do to help strengthen the area, or even get some really deep tissue massage in the area. There are ways you can do some self-massage with some of the tools that someone described earlier, some foam rollers or some self-massagers to help break up and loosen some of that scar tissue.
Okay.
And see if it helps with the vascularity.
Could it be possible that the tendon pulled off of the bone at all? Or?
It's possible, but I'd expect you'd be having more symptoms than cramps a couple times a week.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It'd be more debilitating, and it would have been fairly obvious, and you would have been black and blue down the back of your leg.
Okay. So massaging and stretching would probably be the...
Yeah, and some strengthening, because strengthening helps increase the vascularization in the area. You might be able to build some new vascular supply in the area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. Good luck. And, you know, a trip to a masseuse wouldn't...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Feel good?
Trip to masseuse would feel really good. My kids rubbed my feet last night. They saw that I was a little bit down and out. And so they gave me a foot massage, and it was great. So then I rubbed theirs, and they saw how wonderful it was. So I recommend a trip to the masseuse.
Chris in Spring Green, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I've had three back surgeries, three laminectomies. I'm wondering if there's anything that I can do to strengthen my back more than they've already told me to do. I'm currently taking pain medication. I've been on it for, I don't know, 6 years, and I'd like to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what I can do to be able to get away from it.
Okay. What levels were your laminectomies?
Three and four.
Okay. And they've gone in three different times?
Yes. It's the two levels and then one more.
Okay. All right. And I presume they sent you to therapy.
Yes,
ma'am. For these things. And are you doing an exercise program?
I try to. My problem is I drive semi for a living, so I don't get a lot of chance to do them. But I do them first thing in the morning when I get up.
Okay. All right. And you're driving a semi on pain medication?
I limit it as much as possible, yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, it seems to me that you haven't completely finished rehabilitation. I can see where your occupation has really gotten in the way of your giving this a really good shot. There are a lot of things that you can do at home on your own, but it's really difficult to get motivated to do the intensity of exercise that needs to be done to recover from something like three back surgeries. I mean, each time it knocks you down, and it's a pretty deep hole to get back out of there. So, you know, I'd go back to see the physician if you haven't seen the physician for a while. Go back and see the physical therapist and tell them you're still having a lot of troubles and have them retool your rehab program.
Okay.
One of the things that often happens is people get their rehab program and they get it, you know, 6, 12 weeks, maybe 3 months out of their surgery.
Yes.
But then you keep changing and progressing over the next year or sometimes 2 years, and you really need to have your rehab program updated to keep pace with where you are at any given point in time.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck,
Chris.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Mike in La Crosse, what's on your mind? Hi.
Well, I've got a history of low back pain, and I'm 52 years old. I stay in pretty good shape. I run, do exercise, machine, swim. For about the past 3 months, I've been troubled. I had a what initially was, I guess, diagnosed as IT band and the TFL strain.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've come to the... And then about 3-4 weeks ago now, it was like the band in the right side of my thigh, right thigh. It went just really tensed up, spasmed out on me, went down into my lower leg. And,
mm-hmm.
and subsequently, my right foot went numb, and that's gotten somewhat better.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to therapy, I've seen my chiropractor about it, and I'm doing exercises and stretches that I've received from both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been about 3 weeks since that happened, and I'm at the point now where I've still get tightness in my right calf, but then I've still got numbness in the ball of my right foot
mm-hmm.
and my big toe and the toe next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe what he was talking about originally, what the IT?
Well, that's the iliotibial band. That's that wide band of tissue on the outside of your leg. And the origin is up in your butt. The origin comes from several of your gluteal muscles.
Okay.
Yeah. So go ahead. So you're still having this numbness in the ball of your foot?
Right, and at times it seems like it's getting a little bit better, lesser in the toes, and maybe even in the ball of the foot. But I guess my question is, how long should I, you know, I'm continuing to do the exercises and the stretching. How long should I continue with this before I go back to my doctor and push, and I get Is it realistic to expect this to go away after a few more weeks?
It is realistic to expect it to go away. Are you still seeing a physical therapist?
No, we got to the point where the right now I'm supposed to just continue on with the exercises.
Okay. Well, I would say that's the problem, because you shouldn't have to call me to get answers to those questions. Your physical therapist should answer those for you. And if you're still not back to the activities that you want to do, then your therapy isn't done. So you should be continuing on a trend to get better. If not, then you need to go in and have your exercises updated and changed as you improve. Numbness should be coming out of your foot, should be, you know, gradually moving up your leg, and then the symptoms around your hip and back resolving. So if you're not there, then you need to have some new exercises, some different exercises, a different rehab program than where you're at now.
Mm.
So if you're not comfortable going back to the same person you were seeing, then, you know, look for someone else in your area or your plan or your network. If you can, find somebody who's an orthopedic clinical specialist.
Okay. Mm.
Okay. Good luck,
okay,
Mike.
Okay, but it should get better. It should get better.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Chuck in Bruce, Wisconsin. Your turn now. Hi, Chuck.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Pardon me?
Your mind?
Yeah, I've had 7 back surgeries. My whole lower lumbar is fused. I've got nuts and bolts in my upper thoracic. I walk 3 miles a day. I do my exercises. Right now I'm on about 10 Alterams a day. They want to put me on narcotics now to take the leg pain away, and I don't want to, so I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Oh, what's your question?
The question was, are there some exercises or things that he can do in addition?
Well, it's great that he's walking 3 miles a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to know what else he can do, because I don't know what he's done. I expect if he's been through 7 back surgeries and he's got that much hardware in his upper spine, that he has been through some therapy. I guess one of the things that I'd recommend, if he hasn't tried it, is some aquatic therapy, some exercise in a pool, because that unloads your spine. And for a lot of people who are having leg pain, they find that a successful place to rehabilitate. I expect with as much hardware as he has in his back that it may be difficult for him to get up and down off the floor to do a traditional rehabilitation program for his back. So that may have been a limiting factor in the past. But there's a tremendous amount of stuff you can do to rehabilitate your back in the water. And for many people, just getting in the pool and getting the weight off their back and their limbs decreases their pain. So many people use it for pain control as well as for exercise and rehabilitation. So if Chuck can't find anyone in his area that specializes in that, you know, he can call me and I can try to find somebody for him. Even if there's not a physical therapist with a pool, many people contract with local pools, or they go to a local hotel and get in a pool there. And so there's lots of ways to get in a pool, even if you don't belong to a health club.
Good luck, Chuck. Thank you very much for calling. And Herb in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Herb. Herb, are you there? Oh, we lose Herb? We must have lost Herb. I guess we lost Herb. Herb, are you there? We lost him. Sorry. Roman in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Roman.
Hi, good morning. I believe we met on this subject about a month ago. I think it's a good subject because a lot of people apparently are suffering with these back problems. I'm 76. I ran a couple marathons. I've been a jogger for over 40 years. About 3-4 years ago, I had some back pain. I went in to my doctor. They took an x-ray. They told me that I should quit running, and I did. My brother-in-law, who was younger than I and ran these marathons with me, he said one of the exercises that he found that helped was to lay on your back. Now, everybody listen that's got back pain, because this is very simple, but you got to listen. And stretch your legs straight out and raise them a few inches off the floor and hold them there for 10 seconds, drop them for 10 seconds, up for 20 seconds, down for 10, up for 30, down for 10, until you have them up for 60 seconds. Now, this sounds easy. It only takes 5 minutes. I didn't do it, so I had a neighbor that was out doing some heavy labor, and I commented to him, and he said, how can you do it at your age? Well, he said, I used to have back pain, but then he says, you know, somebody told me to lay on my back and raise my legs 10 and 20. So I started doing it after being told twice, and you know, that strengthens your back muscles. And after you do it, do some stretching exercise. Stand and touch your toes about 20 times. And my back pain is gone completely, and I just want to share this with everybody because it's so simple. I don't get any pain, truthfully. I haven't taken a pain pill in 25, 30 years, and I don't say this brag, but if somebody wanted to find out why, they could talk to me, and I'd give them my diet and a few other things. But this back exercise, raising your legs, has done it for me, and I'm sure it did it for my brother-in-law and my neighbor. So I think it's a simple thing that everybody could try. It's not easy. You're going to have to really strain
to do it. Effect. Yeah.
Well, Herb, thank you for that, and congratulations to you. Have you gone back to running, would be my question.
As a matter of fact, I did run a couple times, and we're walking over 3 miles a day. We walk 3 1/3 every
Excellent.
Day, and
Excellent.
It takes about 50 minutes to do that, so we're really cutting it. Nobody wants to walk that fast with us, but my wife and I both. She does it because she was diagnosed with diabetes and high blood pressure, and she's got her. She looks like a high school senior now.
Oh, boy, I hope my husband talks about me so lovingly when we're that age. So you bring up a couple really good points, Roman, and that is a good strengthening program. And what you've described is what we would consider to be a very high-level or advanced abdominal strengthening program. And that is basically what physical therapists do, except most people aren't able to start at such a high level. We start people at a much lower level. First of all, teaching them to contract the right muscles, because what we find is that many people who have back pain, if you give them that exercise, they contract all kinds of muscles except the ones they're supposed to. So we start out by teaching them where the muscles are, what they do, training them to contract those muscles, and then we gradually increase the load by adding arm movements, leg movements, more challenging postures to kind of get them to the point where they could be able to do that. So for a lot of people, that exercise is going to be so difficult, it'll increase their pain, and then they'll never want to exercise again. So we start them at a lower level and try to work them up to such a thing. But you also said something important, that you have other things you could share with them, such as your diet. And what I find is that people who are so motivated to say, okay, I'm going to do this, it's really hard, I'm going to do it, they do a lot of other things that are in their benefit also. They don't smoke, they watch what they eat, they keep their weight down, they do other kinds of exercises, like you described, stretching. So all those are important components as well.
Thanks a lot for calling, Roman. Appreciate it. And Gail in De Pere, we'll go to you next. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I do landscape maintenance for a living, and it involves a lot of bending up and down, pulling weeds, kneeling, you know, planting shrubs, et
sure.
cetera. And after, you know, say 4 or 5 hours, if I'm done with a job, I could barely get into the truck. And when I drive home, it's like I hobble out because my hamstrings are so tight. I must mention I am very inflexible to begin with. I did buy a book on stretching, you know, and I do the stretching exercises. However, you know, they never seem to really help. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions for me, different things to try.
Well, I guess my first suggestion would be thinking about how you move and how you position yourself for your job. So you can do stretching, and the stretching is great to try to help keep yourself loose. But the biggest problem is the number of hours that you spend in that forward flexed position. And I know when I've done my own yard work from gardening and this and that, the next day my back is sore, my hamstrings are sore, because your hamstrings are working really hard to keep you from falling over forward. When you're in that kind of crouched position, or you're in that bent over position, your hamstrings are working, and they're actually being pulled to different directions. They attach down at your calves, so they're trying to keep you rooted on the ground. Then at the top end, where they attach in your at the bottom of your butt, they're trying to keep your trunk from falling forward. So you're really kind of pulling them two different directions. So it puts a tremendous load on them. So what I would suggest is taking a look at your day and how you move, and try to spend less time in that position. Think about what kind of posture you might be in, like in a half kneeling position where you have one knee on the ground and the other one with your foot on the ground with your knee bent. So that'll place less strain on your back. It'll place less strain, you know, on your knees and hamstrings. Also trying to vary your task so you're not doing this in the same posture for a long period of time, but, you know, getting up, you know, getting soil, you know, mixing this and that, but trying to vary your posture and your activities as much as you can during that time frame.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Ed in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ed.
Hi there. I sleep in a kind of a weird position where I use my arm instead of a pillow. I really kind of crank my arm up under my head, it doesn't affect me enough that it wakes me up. But the next day, when I'd use some motions, whether it's just every things you're doing or going to the gym, there can be some sharp pain in that towards the shoulder socket. So I don't know how to get myself to stop sleeping that way, but I just figured I'd see what I could possibly do about the pain that I get the following day from sleeping that way.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, and that is you're going to have to try to train yourself not to. That position with your arm up overhead,
yeah,
places a lot of pressure on your rotator cuff and the bursa that sits over the rotator cuff. So when you're in that position for long periods of time, it's not getting a very good blood supply, and it just irritates it. So, you know, somehow you're going to have to train yourself not to do that. So,
okay.
You know, think about positions, whether you try to stay on your back so that your arm doesn't get overhead, or on your other side, or, you know, you can always tie it around your waist for a couple nights. But I think you're right. It's that position that's troubling it. So I think it'd be a good idea at this point to try to break that habit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks,
good luck.
Thanks for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have two lines open, actually. So if you'd like to join in with a question for Lori Tyne Brody as we talk with her about aches and pains and sprains and strains, give us a call. Here's that number. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. Robin in Arena is next. So let's go to Robin. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question concerning pain in one of my heels. I'm 43, I'm very active, but over this last summer, I noticed that my left heel really hurt when I walked on it, and it's especially painful when I wake up in the morning. And I will explain that I usually don't work during the summer because I have a teaching position, so I'm only working during the school year. And I very seldom wear shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I've developed a bone spur there or what can I do?
It sounds like you have pretty classic plantar fasciitis. And so for someone who doesn't wear shoes very often, it's understandable why the shoe absorbs shock and it helps control the transfer of forces from your heel out your toe when you do normal walking. So you've described what is the classic symptom of plantar fasciitis, and that is pain upon first arising in the morning. When you sleep during the night, your feet are typically pointed, and so the plantar fascia, which is a thick ligamentous type tissue on the bottom of your foot, becomes shortened, and then you step down on it first thing in the morning and bend your toes and your foot up the other direction, and it stretches it. And so it really doesn't like that.
Uh-huh.
So what do you need to do? You need to wear good shoes with a good arch support. Sometimes a heel cup or a gel heel insert will help in your shoes during the day, but you need a good arch support, because when your arch collapses, that's when it strains the fascia. And then for at night, you can wear something called a night splint. You can find them online.
Jim Packard is saying,
Yeah, exactly. And I have one also because I've been battling the same thing now for several months because I can't follow my own advice. But I do have a night splint now, and that helps. And Jim has a posterior night splint, one that goes behind your calf and goes underneath your foot. I found that cumbersome. I got what's called a dorsal night splint that fits on the top of your foot and ankle. And I find that to be a lot more comfortable. What it does is it holds your foot up during the night so that when you get out of bed, you don't have that sudden shortening. And that tends to help a lot of people.
Okay.
There's a variety of other things you can do if this doesn't resolve on your own over the next couple months.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Robin. Ann in Madison, your turn now. Just a second here. Now we got you. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I've been having a problem when I bike with this very severe sort of pain or numbness in my toes.
Mm-hmm.
When I ride in the summertime outdoors, I'm riding a bike with toe cages mm-hmm. and hard-soled biking mm-hmm. shoes. But now I'm having the same problem when I'm spinning mm-hmm. This fall in a class. And there I'm wearing different shoes with the clipless system, and I'm clipping onto the bike. But I'm having mm-hmm. the same problem, and I can't ride more than, 45 minutes before it really gets sore, mm-hmm. and I need to get off the bike and kind of work my toes around or take my shoes off and rub them. And these are not new shoes. This is not a new bike. I mean, but it just kind of got really bad this summer.
Hmm.
Have you experimented with different kinds of shoes or tried different inserts in your shoes?
I haven't tried any inserts, and it's two different kinds of shoes that I wear.
Okay.
When I'm, on the bike or spinning, they're different shoes.
Okay, and you don't have numbness in your feet at any other time?
Not usually.
Okay. Well, the question is, what is the source of the pressure on a nerve? You're obviously getting pressure on a nerve. So, you kind of start at your back. Could be the position of your back.
Okay.
Where you're getting a stretch if you're forward flexed. It could be right on your tailbones, right where you're sitting, because, again, your sciatic nerve passes through your butt and your piriformis, and most times on a bike seat, you're sitting right on it.
Yeah.
So it could be coming from that. You could try a different seat. Then you keep following on down. You look at your knee posture. If your knees are in or out or you have some rotation, you could be getting some entrapment somewhere around in the calf, or it could be through the calf. Because of the calf muscle working while you're biking. So, it's not a simple answer. So what I would suggest is that you experiment with different things up through the kinetic chain. You can try getting, for example, an arch support in your shoe and change the posture of your foot in case there's an entrapment somewhere in your foot, even though you have different shoes.
Yeah.
Height of the seat might be off, too, so your stretch.
Right, the height of the seat, you could be stretching there. It could be, again, due to your knee posture, your ankle posture. It could be a lot of calf muscle work where you're compressing some of the nerves there.
Okay.
So I'd suggest kind of experimenting with some of those things, and if you... You could see a physical therapist who specializes in sports or triathlons or bikes. You could also go to a bike shop and have them look at you on your bike with your shoes and have them assess your posture from that angle, too.
Yeah. Well, I've been riding the new bikes at Sports Medicine.
Uh-huh.
The first day they take all these measurements and they, check everything.
Okay.
I never used to have a problem spinning. It was more of an outdoor thing, and now all of a sudden I'm having it spinning. So it may be something to do with the posture there.
It could be something to do with the posture, yeah. Or sometimes once you get the nerve sensitized by irritating when you're biking outside, then it doesn't take as much to trigger it in other situations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Could it be I see a chiropractor sometimes, because I can mm-hmm. tell when I'm out of line. Mm-hmm. Could there be an issue there, like up in my back?
Yes, it could be something in your back, and that'd be fairly easy to figure out if after you've been to the chiropractor, then you go spinning. If you don't have the numbness in your foot, then you would know that whatever he or she did was part of the cause.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks a lot for calling. And Judy in Stevenson, Michigan, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I have a problem I have bunions.
Mm-hmm.
And my big toe on my right foot is starting to turn
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And also I'm having with the heel on the inside mm-hmm. of the right, I'm having problems and it aches and burns. And I was wondering if that has anything to do with the bunion.
Oh yeah, it's all tied together. It's all tied together. Typically what happens is people who pronate or whose feet roll in
mm-hmm.
or who are wearing shoes with insufficient support that allows their feet to roll in too much, it places a stretch on the soft tissues on the undersurface of your foot, including some small nerves and your plantar fascia, so that either of those things could cause the burning. And then you place too much pressure on the joint of your big toe,
uh-huh.
and you roll off the inside. Instead of rolling out the end of your big toe, you roll off the inside of your big toe. It starts to push your big toe in towards your other toes, and you get a big bunion.
Mm.
So it's all linked together. Have you seen a podiatrist?
No, I haven't.
Oh, this would be the time. Actually, probably a year ago would have been the time, but saving that, this would be the next best time to see somebody now.
Because I have an appointment with the orthopedic.
Okay.
And the thing is, I didn't know if the toe turning in had something to do with the bunions, because I just started getting these bunions, I'd say, in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they came on really fast. They've grown fast.
Yeah. Well, something has changed in your gait. Make sure that your whoever you see refers you to a physical therapist to help deal with some of the posture, strength, mobility things, and to help you with your gait, because something has changed in the last 6 months to accelerate them, and you need to figure out what that is and stop that progression.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Alrighty. Thank you very much.
Judy.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. Kathy in Eau Claire, hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I whacked my husband whacked my finger with a wrench last summer, right on the knuckle.
Oh.
I'm not even kidding. And now it's still, I had it x-rayed at the time because I honestly thought I broke it, but I didn't. But now I've got like a hard lump right where it is, and it looks similar to what I've checked out online as osteoarthritis. And I'm wondering if an injury can trigger that, and what can I do to slow it down, or if I'm even close to the right diagnosis.
Which finger is it?
My index finger.
Okay, and it's on,
the knuckle closest to my nail.
Right at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, so you haven't had an x-ray since it happened.
Right after it happened,
right,
I had one.
But not since then.
No,
not since you've developed this lump.
Right.
Well, you know, you need to know what the lump is. A lump could be soft tissue lump. It could be some scar tissue from the damage to the joint capsule, or it could be bone. If it was bone, it would fall into the category possibly of osteoarthritis, but it typically isn't a defined bump. You know, arthritis would present more as just a generalized enlargement of the joint. Typically, a localized bump would probably be some scar tissue of some sort from the soft tissue trauma. If you wanted to sort it out, you would need to go see a physician, have it evaluated, and perhaps another x-ray taken to see if you can see a bony bump. And then you'd need to go from there.
Okay.
But it really is one of two possibilities in terms of that. Are you able to move and use that joint?
Yes.
Does it hurt a lot?
It only hurts if I push on it, but it just kind of looks gnarly.
Okay. My guess is it's probably not arthritis. If I had to be a betting person, which I tend not to be, I would bet against arthritis based upon that description, because arthritis is in your joint and it hurts when you use the joint. So my guess is it's extra articular outside your joint and it's some sort of soft tissue mass of scar tissue or something. But go have it checked out. And you can see if you have problems with it, you know, there's occupational therapists or physical therapists who specialize in hand therapy who might be able to talk to you about some treatments to minimize the size of that lump.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Dave in Janesville. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, you guys.
Sure. What can we do for you?
Well, I hope a lot. But anyway, I'll be brief and take my answer off the air. I'm fused L233445. And then I was diagnosed with a torn labrum, 180-degree torn labrum in my right hip. I've got this chronic back and hip pain.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through a series of tests and an MRI and did the injection with the dye. And if the pain went away, then it was my hip, and so I had arthroscopic hip surgery, and I had arthroscopic hip surgery, and it was not by the physician who did all the diagnostics, because mm-hmm. I couldn't get into him for like months, and mm-hmm. Pain was just mm-hmm. excruciating. And so they trimmed the labrum, and now I've got a piece of inside my hip. I've got a piece of cartilage missing, but it's not bone on bone; it's bone on cartilage.
Okay.
And so now I just have had a injection in my hip of you know what it is.
Synvisc? Cortisone.
Cortisone. There okay. you go. Thank you. I'm sorry. And my hip pain went away for a little while, and this pain it gets very, very intense right on like the pointy part of your hip,
mm-hmm.
and then it'll go down, it'll get right to about my knee, and then I don't have it, but it'll go down my outside of my calf and the outside of my foot. I've been going to physical therapy for 2 months, and they are kind of at their wit's end. They can do a deep muscle massage on my hip area, you know,
mm-hmm.
and get it to go away, but now like when I stand up, I can't stand for more than 10 minutes.
Hmm.
Or it's just the pain just kills me.
Hmm.
If I sit down, it goes away.
You know, we'll ponder that for mm-hmm. a while and think about what we might do for Dave and let you know that you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look now at aches and pains and sprains and strains and how to deal with them with Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And we have a gentleman with some hip pain.
Yes, when we last left Dave, he was having a lot of problems with his right hip and pain down the outside of his thigh. He had a number of issues going on. He was fused from L2 through L5, and then he had this labral tear, 180 degrees, I think he said, labral tear in his right hip. And for those who are unfamiliar with that, your hip joint is not unlike your shoulder in that there's a thick wedge of cartilage that helps increase the congruity of that space. And it's only been in the last decade or so that they've really taken a good look at the labrum in the hip and how it can be a cause of hip pain. And they've more recently started doing arthroscopic surgeries on the hip. So I don't know the origin of that labral tear, if he had an injury, if he had an acute injury to it, or if he had a wear and tear kind of problem, in which case you would think that arthritis was a problem. If he's fused L2 to L5 and he has this hip problem, it makes me think that underlying osteoarthritis is a problem. So why is he still having the deep aching? He had a cortisone injection and it relieved his symptoms. That tells me that it could be an arthritic kind of origin.
Sure.
Because the cortisone beats back the inflammation and pain goes away. So, he's in physical therapy now. And he says they're at their wit's end, which I can understand. I've been there with people, too. And that's why we have colleagues that we can turn to get another opinion. So if they're frustrated and he's frustrated and you're not making any progress, I would just ask the physical therapist if there's someone else that they recommend that they see. And most of the time, they're happy to send them to a colleague who they know has expertise in an area or works with a certain kind of patient population, because having both parties frustrated isn't going to help anybody. My guess, based upon the little bit of information I have, and this is clearly only the tip of the iceberg, is that the origin of most of his pain is probably his hip, just based upon his response to the cortisone injection. But there's a lot of other stuff going on. If he's fused and you have abnormal mechanics, the spine isn't moving like it's supposed to be, transfers loads to the hip. Hip's not moving like it's supposed to be, has to transfer loads someplace else. They have to go somewhere. So the knee, the upper back, whatever.
Sure.
So there's a lot of stuff going on. It's a complicated case. And it's reasonable for people to be frustrated. But I'd suggest, having someone else with a fresh pair of eyes take a look at it.
Let's go to Tony and Ashland next. Hi, Tony.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for the program. I love your show. I have problems with my right shoulder, and I had an MRI done. This is chronic for years I've had it, and it comes and goes. But the MRI said the top muscle on the rotator cuff was 90% torn,
mm-hmm.
and I learned from a previous show that a 66-year-old gentleman had the problem, and you didn't recommend surgery because of the deterioration of that tendon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is 54 too old? And how about that rest of the 10%? Will that
Oh, what a great question. I'm glad you were paying attention, Tony. You get an A on your quiz today. Well, first of all, you said something important, and that is the top muscle. That's the supraspinatus. There are actually four muscles to the rotator cuff, three that rotate at one direction and one that rotates at the other, but the supraspinatus, the infraspinatus, and the teres minor. And you said the supraspinatus is gone. Usually they will operate on these if it's an acute tear. So if you fell down, you tore it, they'll go in and operate. You've had a chronic problem for years, you say, which tells me you've had a degenerative tendon. And so it's when they get in there, if they went in surgically, it would not be a pretty sight. It wouldn't be a thick, glistening, pristine tendon that can be easily reattached. It would be a pile of mealy mush and this gray stuff that's a little bit like oatmeal. They're not going to really have any kind of quality tissue to reattach. That being said, the other side of the coin is there's, you know, 90% of the people without a rotator cuff do well without it. So if you go in and you get some therapy to rehabilitate the remaining muscles of your rotator cuff, as well as your deltoid and some of the other muscles surrounding your shoulder girdle, you can live to a ripe old age without having any problems with that shoulder.
Even so, if that 10% goes?
Even if that 10% goes, you bet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have some exercise? I exercise it every morning anyway.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if I'm using the right muscles. Is there a certain specific one you could tell me about?
There are two that are really good for that muscle group. The first one is if you extend your arm straight in front of you, straight ahead.
Mm-hmm. Like you're shaking hands.
Like you're shaking hands, but straight out from your shoulder, not above your shoulder, but slightly below shoulder level, and then bring it out about 45 degrees with your thumb up. Raise it up and down. So drop it down to your thigh and then lift it up till it's straight out. And you do that up and down. And if that's easy, you can put a 1-pound hammer in your hand and do it that way. Then the other exercise would be lying on your side with the injured arm on the upside. Put a little towel roll under your elbow, bend your elbow 90 degrees, let your hand drop to your stomach, and rotate your hand up and away from your stomach. So those two would be the two that I'd recommend.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Bob in New Auburn, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning. I got another shoulder problem for you. Injured my shoulder at work end of July and went in, probably about 6 weeks later because it was just an extreme amount of pain, wasn't getting any better. Had an MRI done on it with absolutely no damage inside. So I started physical therapy about 3 weeks ago. And with the physical therapy, they've been putting the medicated patches on it with, you know, where they run mm-hmm. the electricity through
right.
them. So I did that for a couple of weeks. And this last week, I wasn't able to go in. I was working out of the area. And so I thought the shoulder was getting better until this last week. And realized without any patch that it really isn't getting any better.
No.
And I'm kind of curious, you know, how long is this all take? I'm doing exercises with the physical therapist.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my question. Because the patches is called iontophoresis, so they put a little medication, usually a cortisone, in a patch, and they deliver it via an electric current into the joint. That's to help with pain and inflammation. It really doesn't have a tremendous therapeutic effect beyond that. Sometimes if you have an active inflammation, it can help keep it under control so that your exercises can be successful. But the real mainstay of your treatment program is the exercise program. And you really need 6 to 12 weeks of exercise before you're going to see significant improvement, especially that since yours has been since July. I mean, here it is. It's the second week of October, and you injured your shoulder in July. So it's not only been injured, but you've had a many number of weeks of deconditioning beyond that. So you're digging yourself out of a pretty deep hole. So don't give up on the exercises.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Mary in Managua, hello to you.
Hello to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I started last year, about a year ago, with a lot of pain on my right side. I went to a chiropractor, and I went from bad to worse, where my left side, all the way down to my foot, would become very, very, very painful. And at the first part of the year, I was diagnosed, I finally had an MRI, and I was diagnosed with a synovial cyst, and it's at L5-S1, which was pretty much had me out on the sofa for a good part of last winter until I could get in to see a neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, I did try injections also, which did not work. By the time I got in to see the neurosurgeon, I got a little bit better. He told me that if I did have to have surgery, it would be a big surgery, which would require fusion, and he suggested that I just start testing the waters and try to carry on.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tried to carry on all this time. I am better. However, I'm left with a little bit of symptoms on my left side, which is tingling in the foot,
mm-hmm.
But I have all this excruciating pain on the right side. I've been told I have bursitis. I've been to the physical therapist at least 12 times, at least. She does a lot of pelvic floor work and myofascial release
mm-hmm.
on me, but my big problem is I cannot sit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm left with, I cannot sit. I'm okay if I'm standing. I'm okay if I'm walking. But as soon as I sit down, from the crease, which I'm saying is like right below your butt,
mm-hmm.
until the back of my knee, on both sides of my legs, I have to get up because I can't sit. And sitting in the car is like the worst, but even
right.
sitting at my office desk is, I can't do it. So I really don't know where to go from here. And my physical therapist does not think my pain is related to the cyst,
mm-hmm.
so I don't know if I should go back, because I wanted to go back to the neurosurgeon. I was ready for back surgery, but
mm-hmm.
she doesn't think he would even touch me because she doesn't think that it's related.
Okay. Can you sit on any kind of chair?
No.
So hard chair, soft chair, back support, no back support, none of that matters.
I have a lumbar, and I also have a little cushion that I do sit on.
Does sitting on the cushion help? Does anything help with sitting?
Nope.
Anything?
Nothing
at all?
Nope.
Okay.
Hmm.
That's that's a tough case. I'm not sure what to say other than to keep working with your physical therapist. You may want to see another medical practitioner besides the neurosurgeon. You may want to see like a physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist.
Hmm.
Physical medicine and rehabilitation, PM&R, physical medicine and rehabilitation. They are people who specialize in chronic pain, often in low back pain, but they're non-surgeons. So they're the people who will, you know, the surgeon looks at it and says, yes or no, I can't help you with an operation. But these are people who look at your pain and say, okay, what's the source of the pain? What other options are available for this patient? What hasn't been tried yet? Things like that. So you may want to think about a physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist to take a look again at the big picture, because it was your right side that took you to someone in the first place.
It was my left side that took me to something in the first place, and now I'm left with the right side has all the pain, but I still can't sit.
Okay, yeah. I'd suggest going to someone in PM&R and getting another look at the big picture.
Where would I find a specialist like that?
Well, UW has them. The Research Park Clinic has physicians who specialize in PM&R, and I'm sure some of the outlying clinics do. If you just look in the phone book, I don't know who your health plan is with, but if you look, they list physicians by specialty area, and you just look for physical medicine and rehabilitation.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Barb in Wauwatosa, we go to you now. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I have arthritis in my hands, and as a result, I have knobs on some of my fingers. You mentioned this condition earlier. What kind of a doctor would I see?
Is it osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis?
Probably osteo.
Okay. I would probably see an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in hands. It's a very specialized area. Uh-huh. The reason I asked is if it was from rheumatoid arthritis, you might want to see a rheumatologist.
Okay.
But otherwise, I would recommend an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in hands, and then hopefully they will refer you to a therapist who does hand therapy who can help you with splints, with special tools that are designed to reduce stress on your hand joints, you know, gardening tools, kitchen tools, other kinds of tools.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Barb. Mike in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hey, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was prescribed from a foot specialist as having in both my feet, the nerve endings of my balls of my feet are shot. He said they were wore out and that I could do surgery, but that was no proof that or evidence that he could make it better. So he just recommended putting these soft foot sponges, you know, foot pads in my shoes and go on with life. Do you think of any other thing I can do?
I need to back up a little bit. He said the nerve endings were worn out. Do you have diabetes or?
No diabetes.
What kind of symptoms are you having?
They're like, it's sore to walk on my feet and my balls, my feet, kind of like when I step down, they're like, it's like picking, you know, and sore.
Okay.
I used to play, you know, a lot of softball with bad cleated shoes on and hard clay. So it's like for over about 25 years. So I can almost understand what he's talking about. But it was just kind of shocked me when he said I wore out my nerve ending. So I guess I'm confused.
I'm a little bit confused, too, by that terminology. I haven't heard anyone use that as a description for foot problems. And was this a podiatrist?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you have a couple options. One, you could see a different podiatrist and see if someone else has a different recommendation for you. Because it seems as though with your activity level and such, you're unwilling to accept this as the final solution. There are also physical therapists who specialize in treating feet, who can take a look at the mechanics of your feet and make recommendations about shoe wear, orthotics, etc. And maybe taking a look at you farther up to see if there's any reason in terms of your hip or back or knee posture that might be contributing to your foot problems. So those would be a couple recommendations. I would continue to seek out another opinion on this.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Mike.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Chris in Sparta, hello to you.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I've got a teenager who is very athletic and seems to be complaining of knee issues after being done playing a lot of soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is something that has to do with growing pains or if this is actually something to be concerned about.
Okay, male or female?
Male.
Male. Okay. Oh, son. Okay. Sorry, I missed that. is he complaining about one knee, both knees?
Both.
Okay. And how old is he?
15.
15?
And it's actually been going on probably for a year, I bet.
Okay.
It was bothering him when he was playing soccer last year.
Okay. Can you point to any area in his knee that's particularly troublesome?
I guess I can't specifically say.
Okay. Well, there are a couple things that are common in his age group, and I can share that information with you.
Okay.
One of those is called Osgood-Schlatter's, and that's if you go right below your kneecap to that bump on the front of your shin bone, kind of the top of your shin bone, your tibial tuberosity. The big quadriceps muscles, the tendon attaches there. And in that age group, when they're growing really fast, a lot of times their muscles are stronger than their bones and their bones aren't fully fused yet. So you can get an enlargement and a little bit of inflammation where that tendon attaches to the bone.
Okay.
So if he's tender, it's a really easy diagnosis to make. They're tender right on that bone. That's Osgood-Schlatter's. You treat it with ice, quadriceps stretching.
Okay.
People also in that age group in that sport tend to have kneecap problems. And again, quadriceps stretching, some icing after practice can help that, making sure the quadriceps stay strong. But good stretching, good shoe wear, making sure they tie their shoes. You know, I walked over to the studio, Larry, and I'm walking behind this young college student who doesn't have his shoes tied. And I'm watching his feet, because this is what I do everywhere I go. I watch people walk, and his feet are rolling over on the insides of his tennis shoes. And I'm thinking, I wish I had my business card, because I'm going to tell you to call me in 20 years when your knees hurt because you're not tying your shoes today. Mm-hmm. You know, making sure that he's wearing good shoes the rest of the day when he's at school, and making sure his soccer shoes have good support. You might want to stick an arch support or something in them.
Okay,
so,
arch support would actually help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Another quick question. He's got an older brother mm-hmm. who, in this boy that I'm speaking of, actually, he plays hockey as well. Mm-hmm. But I just seem to be noticing more complaining during soccer season. His brother ended up suffering from something called osteochondritis. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What joint?
Well, that was in the knee.
Okay.
It was in the knee area, which I was told seemed to be something that you see a lot in elderly people, is what his brother had. And I'm just wondering if this is something that could be hereditary. Could this be an issue with the 15-year-old?
Oh, that's a very good question. In the knee, in his age group, osteochondritis desiccans is not age-related. Osteoarthritis is age-related. You can have osteochondritis as a result of an acute injury. But often in the age group you're talking about, it's from unknown etiology. They don't know. They don't know if it's vascular, if there's a part of the growth plate that doesn't have sufficient vascularity and actually part of the bone dies a little bit, or if it's a result of some sort of subacute trauma or repetitive trauma that they haven't been able to track. So it could be hereditary. They don't know if it's hereditary. You know, if it's vascular, then it may be hereditary. If he's complaining about one knee, I'd say it was possible. Complaining about both knees, it's probably more likely an overuse kind of problem.
Okay. Right. And just go with the icing.
Yep.
Like you said, just after each incident, and hopefully this is something that he will grow out of.
Yeah. I hate to say grow out of it, but yes. But, you know, good shoes, stretching, ice. If he's continuing to complain on a regular basis, then go in and have him checked.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. You mentioned treating with cold there, and somebody emailed in wondering, when do you use heat to treat an injury, and when do you use cold to treat an injury?
You can never go wrong with cold. I shouldn't say never. We're taught never to say never. You can rarely go wrong with cold. If you have an acute injury, something that's just happened, put cold on it. And then, you know, the conventional wisdom has been after 24 to 48 hours, you can switch to heat. People like heat. It feels more comfortable. But in terms of what happens with the application of heat and cold, you're safer with cold. Sometimes you can put heat on something and it can actually aggravate it and increase bleeding in the area.
So what does cold do?
Cold, it causes a vasoconstriction of the vessels in the area. So if you have an acute injury and you have this extravasation of fluid into the area because vessels are torn and bleeding in the area, it causes a constriction of those blood vessels, so it kind of shuts down the bleeding in the area, so it slows that. So then you would think after 24 to 48 hours that the chemotactic response has occurred and it's brought in all these cells to help fight off and help to heal the injury. But for some people, in an injury in a lower extremity joint or in a limb that's being used a lot, that doesn't happen. You can actually perpetuate the injury by applying heat if you're very actively using that yet.
Oh.
So if you sprain your ankle and you refuse to use crutches and you're still hobbling around on it, the heat could actually make it bleed more.
Okay. So cold. When in doubt, cold.
Yep. It's a good rule of thumb.
Lori, always a pleasure. I expect you'll be learning fairly soon if you're going to be an aunt again.
Oh, I am. I'm certain I'm going to be an aunt again. It's just a matter of when and what the gender is.
Well, let's hope it's very soon. Thank you so much.
Bet.
Lori Tyne Brody will be back with us again. She comes by once a month, usually with Bill Boys and all, but today she was all on her own, and it was really a lot of fun to have her here. She's a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and again, she'll be back in about a month, and we'll do this again with her. Just to let you know, tomorrow on the program, we'll be talking about your pet's health. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine, will be our guest for that show. Thanks a lot for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.